Hello and welcome to another edition of the In Context podcast. Today I have another friend of mine. This is Kevin Greer. How are you doing, Kevin?
Doing well, Ian. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Great to see you again.
You as well.
Me and Kevin first met in person when he visited Middlesbrough. It was just over, not even a year ago, was it?
Yeah, it's past September. Yeah.
Cool. And as you can tell by Kevin's accent, he's not from Middlesbrough or even England. So, Kevin, share a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? And give a little bit of background about what you do, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as Ian said, I'm Kevin Greer, originally from the state of Ohio in the United States. And then in my adult years, I moved to a state, Kentucky, to go to college, the university. And when I finished there, I moved to Chicago, Illinois for a job placement. But then I now live in Baltimore, Maryland, with my now wife and two kids. We have a 3 and a 1-year-old, and they keep us very busy and tired. I moved to Baltimore because my now wife, we were dating long distance. She is a gospel worker for One Hope, which is a church planting network here in Baltimore, Maryland. So I moved to be closer to her, and it's been about almost 5 years ago now.
Awesome. So we've interviewed Joel Cruz, who's the pastor of the Garden Church that you go to. And we've also interviewed Stephanie, your wife, who, like you say, is working for One Hope. And I just thought it'd be good to interview you as well, Kevin, because often we speak to church planters or pastors, and the wives of these church planters and pastors asking what it's like to move to an area that is a different context to possibly what they're used to. And it's the first time I've actually interviewed a husband who's moved to an area to support a wife who's in gospel ministry. So first of all, could you tell me what that was like moving to Maryland? Was that something that you were used to, or was it a brand new context for you to explore?
Yeah, So I had never visited Maryland before dating my wife, but I had been in the context similar to what Baltimore has to offer when I was living in Chicago and also in the cities called Louisville, Kentucky. Both of those are bigger cities. Chicago is the second largest city by population in the United States outside of LA, but I don't really count Los Angeles just because it's it takes up too much space. They claim too many people. So with that, you have your inner city ministries, and by God's grace and His call, I had felt a draw to serve those communities since about 2014, 2015. I joined a church that was involved in that type of work and living in Kentucky. And then also when I moved to Chicago, joined a church that was a similar mindset of inner city ministry. So moving into Baltimore and supporting my wife was actually just an answer to the Lord's prayer, because I wanted to find a wife who would be on the same page as I was being there. Cause to your point, sometimes you're interviewing wives of husbands who wanted to go into those hard to reach places, and they're the ones who need to be convinced. So I had a thought in my mind of how am I going to convince Stephanie to join me in this? But when I found out where she lived, who she worked with, the type of work she was doing, I, was just praising God, because we were both aligned in ministry and what we wanted to accomplish as far as our ministry goals. So that was just a nice change of pace. One of the things that is different to where we're at now is now I've actually bought a home for the first time living in Baltimore, Maryland. We bought a house about 3 years ago. And so I'm less transient. I'm less, moving from apartment to apartment when my lease is up. But now we are more stable. We have met our neighbors, go on walks, talk to people who, are in the neighborhood and have been from there. And that's been a change. That's been really good comparatively from where I'm at now versus where I was in, say, Chicago or Louisville, Kentucky. So it's been a really good experience. I've been very grateful that Stephanie was just already had this mindset, as I said. And then, as you already hinted at, our pastor Joel, his desire to reach that same demographic, you know, it's just been really a big blessing to kind of come in and join their scheme that they have found themselves in.
Cool. So what does your day-to-day life look like then? Because you don't work in your local community. Is that right?
Right. That's true. When I'm worked in the training and development field. So I've worked that now, I want to say the better part of 10 years almost, doing just the corporate environment, you know, where there's the desks and the cubicles and the people, you know, having too many conference meetings and things like that. I've done that now for almost the better part of 10 years. And I would say that that has allowed me to then be able to afford to do the other stuff outside of work. So I live about 30 minutes away from where I work by car. I take, 5 days a week usually at the office. But that's not too bad. I get to listen to your podcast and other podcasts while I'm on the commute. Ministry opportunities, I find myself trying to be more involved in some of that in the evenings or the weekends. And day to day, we'll have, you know, various members of our church over at our house in the evening times. I will, in the weekends when we have the time available for both of us, that's when we'll see ourselves trying to be more out in the community, even going to local parks. Or like I said, going on walks around the neighborhood. That's a day-to-day for us. Really a lot of our time, as you know, Ian, you met our children, that it revolves around them right now. They're so young and just so needy. So we make sure they're eating, staying alive, and then everything else falls into place after that.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, two very beautiful children. My whole family fell in love with them. When they visited in September. Awesome, brother. And again, I think what strikes me as unusual is you work 30 minutes from where you live, but live on the doorstep of where you worship. And that's quite unusual for a lot of people who you find would probably live closer to work and then travel into church. How do you think living in your local community benefits you? As somebody who works full time yet still has a heart for urban ministry, how does that benefit you living in your local community?
Yeah, I would say that in very practical ways, now the folks that I interact with outside of work, it's very easy to try to get them connected and join me, let's say, at a church service or to welcome them into my home, with trying to be hospitable and share the hope of the gospel. Because when I share the gospel and I talk to folks at work, which, you know, I still try to do, many folks who live in this area where I'm at right now actually don't tend to favor driving that far to go to church. They pass a number of good churches on the road to get to my church, which, I would encourage them to find a place close to them as well. But as you know, when you're first inviting somebody to a church service, you're usually wanting to be there with them, you know, sit near them, kind of help them recognize that there's strength in numbers, and that they're welcome. And so as a strategy, we've decided, my wife and I, that we want to live close to where we worship, because we realize that as we want to be intentional with our neighbors, we want to bring those same neighbors in our neighborhood to the church that we attend. And that has been we can walk to our church building. We're close enough, which has been a big blessing. Practically, it's also been a big favor whenever I forget something at the house and I have to run home really quick, you know, kid needs a diaper, something like that. I think they call them nappies over there, right? And so, those are some nice things. I have the pleasure of serving as a deacon at our church. And so being that close has helped with certain building projects, or, you know, the plumbing is backing up, or, you know, the lights need light bulbs need changing. You know, I'm that close. I can be there in 3 minutes and help to do whatever needs to be done. Whereas, you know, if I was living where I work and drove to worship, it would fall a little outside of that scope. And I just never wanted to do that. I want to be around the people who will just happen to walk by the church building at any given day.
So how did your neighbors take to you moving into their area when, I presume you told them and they asked you, why have you moved here? You said, because we worship here. What was the response from your neighbors when they find out your motivation to move into an area which, would I be right in saying, many people are trying to move out of?
Yeah, we have a part of the city of Baltimore where we're in. I learned a statistic just the other day. There's something around 13,000 abandoned houses in the city of Baltimore. And that's, you know, crime is high, drug use is high, just a lot of hopelessness. We find ourselves in an area where a lot of folks have been forgotten about. But in that, the city of Baltimore, especially the neighborhood where we live, is very churched. Like, there's a lot of church buildings. Now, some of them have since closed their doors or have busted out windows and things of that nature. However, you know, folks here in Baltimore are still religious, you know, so when you tell someone that you want to, you know, move into the neighborhood and, you know, serve in your church, they really don't bat an eye to that, because they know what church is, they experience it. Now, whether or not that those churches are preaching the gospel, I'll say is probably not the case, unfortunately. Yeah, but they don't really see that as being odd, because it is a very churched part of the country. The things that they're not doing, though, or not seeing in these contexts, is some of that hospitality that we want to explore and experience with them. As an example, when it came to Christmas time this year, my wife went ahead and made some cookies, and then we went with our two kids door to door and just passed them out and told everybody Merry Christmas. Just very simple, a very non-committal. We just wanted to say hey. And of course, the families love to see the little kiddos. They think they're cute. So we do that, and they're kind of blown away by the generosity and the hospitality. But the fact that we live where we go to church, that doesn't surprise them too much. They're used to that, I suppose. But folks actually opening their doors and trying to interact with their neighbors, they're not used to that. yeah, most people kind of keep to themselves, and they don't interact more than a Sunday morning, if they even go to church.
Wow. Yeah, so that's quite unusual, where it's almost the polar opposite to where we are in Middlesbrough, where people aren't churched. Many people haven't been to church the whole life, or if they have done, it will be for a funeral or a christening or possibly even a wedding. But they're probably more used to community and hospitality for those who... So hospitality and knowing each other's business and saying hello in the street as usual, but actually going to church would be.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's, and just to clarify my previous statement, I should have articulated, I meant that they aren't getting to know their church members, you know, throughout the week. Yeah, we have in the front of our houses, almost all of Baltimore is what they call townhouses or row homes. So you've got houses connected with these steps, or we call them stoops. So you got the stoops going up to your front door, and all around you'll see people just sitting on their stoop, talking to their neighbors, as you say, you know, kind of gossiping or, you know, shooting the breeze, as we would say over here. And so those things for sure do happen. However, that's just not done among church members. So our neighbors across the street who are sitting on their stoops, they aren't ever getting visited by the people they may attend church with. They're just getting visited by the people who live on their block. And right. So that's one of the things that's a little different with us being there, is that they see all the time we have church members coming over for lunch, dinner, We will use them for babysitting our kids so my wife and I can have a date night. It's just, we want to, it's not unusual, Ian, for us to have other members of our church at our house, I would say 3 to 4 days out of the week for different various things. And so that does kind of speak a little bit different to the community because they see the, you know, they're talking about, you know, the weather, they're talking about, you know, the latest news updates and things of that nature on their stoop. But then they see people coming in and out of our house who, you know, are not from here or are, you know, kind of also members of the church, but don't really, you know, they're not native Baltimoreans. And so they're like, what's going on over there? You know, and they get a little bit more intrigued and it's opened up some opportunities for some good conversation.
Awesome. And again, you mentioned earlier about your two children and many people who are considering ministry in hard to reach places in the UK. One of the main concerns is bringing up children in communities where there's high drugs, unemployment or crime. Yet you guys have decided to start a family in one of these communities, never mind take them there. So share a little bit about what that was like. Have you faced any challenges or any fears? And what is the reality of living in a community that is forgotten socially and economically and even spiritually in some areas? What is the reality of living in one of these neighborhoods?
Yeah. So I'll answer the last thing first there. Just kind of the impact there. My wife and I are convinced, as hard as it is for us to fathom, our children will die one day. Mm-hmm. And or Jesus will come back, right? One of the two. And we would rather our children know Jesus, be faithful to love and serve him, than to have a posh, comfortable life where they have lots of money and forget that God even exists, just to say that they avoided potential traumatic events or poverty and things of that nature. And we're also convinced that the only hope for Baltimore or Middlesboro or any neighborhood in the entire world for any kind of reestablishment, spiritually first, of course, but then also, you know, just monetarily to help lift those who are in poverty, the only hope for those folks is the gospel. And so we're convinced that, you know, you raise the, if everyone who is a believer leaves those areas and all you're left with are the non-believers, then you have people such as, you know, you just mentioned in Middlesboro who never attend church, who don't even know about Jesus. We see that in the United States a little bit in more of the Northeast Atlantic coast, states like Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. I've heard stories of people not even have ever heard of the name of Jesus, and yet they still get Christmas Day off, and you know, as a national holiday, and so they don't really know why they have this day. The next generation that's coming up, you know, believers who want to share the gospel, who want to see lives changed, that's the only way that any town's going to revitalize. So we've worried about our children, as most parents would in a normal type of situation, right? Like, if they ever run across the street, live on a fairly busy street, you know, would they ever get hit by a car? But that's a normal, you know, fear that parents would have anywhere in the world, right? But more practically for us, we worry about things like gun violence, you know, in our neighborhood. Guns are legal. And even the folks who have them usually don't have them by legal means. So we're worried that, you know, would it be that they might be in the wrong place, wrong time? Is there a chance that they would go to school? And you know, I'm sure you all hear over there about the inordinate number of school shootings that we have here in the United States. That's a fear that we have of, you know, do we put our kids in school when they become of age to do that? But ultimately, and I'm very grateful for my wife on this too, just helping to maintain a healthy mindset that whether it's a gunshot or if it's cancer, if it's a car accident, or if it's when they hit 90 years old, our children will die one day. And the Lord loves them more than we do. and he knows what he's doing with it. So we want to be faithful to be where he wants us to be, to spread the gospel to the people he's put in our direct environment and in our direct influence. And we want to trust that our children will see us, realize that that's important, and then whether they grow up to stay in those neighborhoods or go into a different area, maybe a hard to reach place, maybe become international missionaries, we don't know. But we're going to pray that wherever God has them, he will protect them, that they will know that Jesus is worth sacrificing everything, including certain opportunities or certain luxuries that we could have if we were to move somewhere else. And so, yeah, it's, you didn't ask this question, but just thinking back through some of the memories, my parents asking that question, I was raised in a mostly suburban, posh neighborhood where I had all the amenities, no real crime. You know, it was made front page news when someone was shoplifted at a grocery store. That's how irregular it was. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now we're living in an area where I believe Baltimore is on the top 10, you know, in per capita for murder rate in the United States. And but again, you know, our mission is to reach the people who need it. And you're only going to see that murder rate go down if people put the guns down. And really the only motivation that is a lasting motivation to put the gun down is to follow Jesus. So we're hoping that that bears fruit in our lifetime. But if not, we hope that, you know, God will use that to bear fruit in future generations as well.
Awesome. Yes. And that was a question that I was going to ask about parents. I'm from the community that we're ministering to, but I think when we first talked about doing it, Rachel's mum and dad were a bit shocked. As like, why do you want to move to an area that you spent so long trying to leave? And I don't think I would have been that bothered if it was just me and Rachel, but with the girls, then you know, the future of the grandchildren. So again, yeah, that is something that not only do we have to consider ourselves, but it's a challenge for our parents as well, I think. So,
I've told them several times, and you know, they finally started to understand, you know, I'm not involved in gangs, I'm not involved in drugs, I'm not involved in prostitution. Therefore, I'm not really a target for most folks, you know, when it comes to these types of activities. and generally speaking, most people that I've interacted with still have some level of respect for the minister. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not a preacher every Sunday morning. I'm a deacon who just serves on our church's music team. I don't have a official title like that. Or Norm doesn't, you know, my wife, even though she's a member of our church and a gospel worker on staff, most people do see like the pastor, the reverend, and, you know, they kind of understand that. But even still, there's some level of respect for just the general church member. So when we see people walking by our church building or walking by our house, and they're sometimes confused because where we live too, and I don't know if this was obvious to you or not, but I'm the one white person in our neighborhood, one white male in our neighborhood. Everyone else is black. It's pretty segregated in Baltimore. So a lot of people have that question, like, why do you live here when you have the choice to live somewhere else? And I'll tell them, oh yeah, no, I serve in a church, you know, here and by, and that kind of is like, oh, okay. And then they don't really want to invite me to some of those more illegal activities anymore.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. So again, I wasn't aware it was so segregated. So again, not only are you unfamiliar with the context geographically, but ethnically you would stand out quite often. Again, when you're walking around in a neighborhood like that, as a different ethnicity, would somebody think that you're there for illegal reasons? So not many would imagine would think you're there for church.
We live about two blocks from a police station, and every morning I'd pass it on my way to work, and I do get some looks from the officers sitting in their police cruisers, like, you know, but thankfully with us being there for a few years now, they recognize my car, they recognize my face, and I think they've come to realize that I must be permanently located. I have been pulled over before for some kind of bogus reason. They just want to, you know, say something, you know, just so they can see if I've got drugs in the car. But then when they see my 2-year-old in the back seat, or, you know, they hear that I, or see that I'm not, you know, impaired with drugs or anything, then they just usually let me go. So, yeah.
Cool. And again, just a couple of the things you brought up, just rewinding a little bit. For many of us, in evangelical circles, the sovereignty of God and his providence, and knowing that the date and time for our first and last breath is given by God and ordained. But when it comes to our children, often we can, I don't know whether doubt that, maybe fear that, as much as be comforted by that. So again, I think that mindset of bringing your children up in a home that is relationally happy, as in having two parents who love one another and love the children, and relationally happy as in pointing these children to Jesus, should be the priority for all of us. But often academics, comfortable lifestyles and things can as much as we can preach that, even as a pastor and a preacher myself, I would declare all those things. But I think one of my biggest challenges is that desire for comfort and an idolatry of family, in particular, my children. So how do you how do you make that a reality? It's easy to say that we all want our children to know Jesus first and foremost, but in the day-to-day living of life, how do we keep that at the forefront of our lives and instill that within our family home?
Ooh, yeah. Well, when I figure that out, I'll come back and answer that question. No, some practical things, that we do, even now at a young age, before we go to bed every night, we do a Bible story. And then we pray and sing a hymn, and that's our bedtime routine. And then throughout the day, of course, you know, we're referencing Jesus and, you know, to our children as they get older and are able to comprehend a little more. We'll start doing more. I'll call them intensive Bible studies, but we're more like directed. You know, like let's talk through this and this topic. You know, I think is kind of how we'll navigate that. But kind of more of a answer to the twist on your question there, to keep it in the forefront of my mind and my wife Stephanie's mind, like this is all the ultimate goal. I try to remember Jesus in the scriptures. Recently, this podcast is being recorded a couple weeks after we celebrate Easter, and we had a Good Friday service a couple Fridays ago. Here in the United States, one of the popular things to do, I'm not sure if this is the case in the UK, but we'll do a 7 last words of Jesus service. Is that anything that you've heard before?
Oh, no.
So that just, through the books of John and Luke, the 7 last phrases while Jesus is on the cross, you know, that he says, and, each preacher does like a little 5-7 minute sermon on each of those things. Excuse me. Well, anyway, I'm reminded of Mary, and when Jesus says in John that, Jesus looks at John and looks at Mary, and he says, "Woman, behold your son, behold your mother," and then he takes her home. And I was reminded about how much pain Mary must have been experiencing, seeing her son, who she nursed, who she, you know, bore, who she weaned, who she, you know, watched his first steps, he, you know, had his, meal, you know, all the things that she would have experienced over his life. She's now seeing him dying in front of her, and just the pain that she must have experienced. But then, but yet Jesus knew that it was better for him to stay on the cross, to die and to raise again, than it would have been to come off the cross to provide his mother the temporary relief of her not having to experience her son die. Of course, she would have preferred to die first. She would have preferred to let her son outlive her, just like I would prefer my children to outlive me. But Jesus, in his kindness, went to the cross, let his mother endure that pain so that G doesn't have to endure any pain anymore for eternity, right? So just taking that same mindset, which is not easy to do, my son and daughter, the pain that they may experience here, that I have to witness them go through, whether that is something as simple as, you know, a scraped knee when they're running down the sidewalk, to bullying at school, to maybe something very traumatic like a gun being brought to school, or heaven forbid, any type of, molestation that we unfortunately hear too much happens for children in cities and things like this. Witnessing addiction, witnessing drug use, witnessing abuse of other types. My prayer is that in witnessing that, they will then look to the suffering servant Jesus, who he bore their sin, and realize that A, this is what Jesus came to die for, and B, it's not always going to be like this. And that is easier said than done. I'm able to articulate that better talking to you on a podcast than I am when I've got my almost 1-year-old in my arms late at night and just think about, you know, one day she might have a boyfriend who breaks her heart and I'm going to want to give that. But, that's the truth, you know, and that's what it is for me. And that's what it is for you, for Esther, for Hannah, you know, and for Rachel, it's for you two to deal with your daughters. And, you know, that's what Stephanie and I will deal with our kiddos. What we do want to think through practically is how do we mentor and disciple our children so that they are able to properly adjust to their surroundings. I don't want them to think that it's normal to get in fights. I don't want them to think it's normal to do drugs, even though they're going to see it all the time. What we want to do is we want to talk to them about how that's actually abnormal. And the reason that these folks are doing this is because they're responding either out of fear, out of revenge, out of sin, and they don't have to respond the same way. So I pray for that a lot, and just hope that I can keep that mentality as they get older. And, you know, we'll see once they start having the ability to kind of talk back to me and all that.
Oh, cool. And again, something that has struck me through speaking with people involved in urban ministry in the US is there's quite a different mentality, an entrepreneurial spirit, an idea of not just reaching the spiritual needs of a community or the practical needs, as in giving off food banks or food parcels or job clubs. You're looking to live and invest financially as well as spiritually into that community. You mentioned earlier about how you live in there. Somebody who's working has bought a home there will invest in the local shops and the local community, and the more Christians who move there, not only will we see a spiritual change, but also a social economic change. Why do you think that attitude is prevalent amongst Christians within the US and sadly not so common within the UK?
Well, the United States has been so built on the American dream, which is very much so a what I would refer to as a Tower of Babylon. Tower of Babel effect, where we can come in, we can build our kingdom, build it up for us, and then we don't have to deal with all the other stuff around. Outside of the cities, the communities tend to be very isolated. I've lived now in several suburbs throughout multiple states in the United States, and it is not uncommon for folks to not even know their next door neighbor. Just because they come in after their job, they go straight into the house, and then they have maybe like a fenced-in backyard, so they never have to interact with anyone. So that is a picture that I've seen over and over again of folks trying to establish their own kingdom, their own Tower of Babel. They don't want to They don't want to have a need for God. They don't want to have a need for others. They want to just establish what they want, get their thing. And unfortunately, that's been a philosophy that's been permeating the United States for a long time, which has led to the mistreatment and marginalization of other groups who don't have that same ability. And where we live at in the West Baltimore, the average household income is somewhere around $17,000 per year. And I don't remember the ratio on pounds, what that would be. But the that's there at the poverty line, or below the poverty line. And studies show that poverty is a more... I recently saw a study, actually our pastor Joel mentioned this in a sermon, that the impact of poverty on a young person is more pervasive and effectual than if their mother had done cocaine while they were in the womb. That the lasting effects of poverty is truly a critical matter. You're talking about access to good food and good education, access to a life free of, you know, certain hardships, even basic hygienic products and necessities and things that you or I may, you know, feel is very common. We'll see folks who just don't have access to that. And so because of that, I think the folks who have the means and have the income to build that entrepreneurial mindset that you were saying have then left the cities. And then the folks in the United States cities that have been left behind, maybe because they don't have the money and such, they are being raised up in different ways through media. Music is very pervasive on, especially the types of music that we hear around our neighborhood, of glorifying the drug use, glorifying the violence, glorifying the, you know, the new money, the quick money, and trying to posture that as a lifestyle it wants to pursue. So it comes down to what gospel are people hearing? Are hearing the gospel of money, the gospel of pull yourself up by your bootstraps, the gospel of if you have enough money, then you'll be really happy and satisfied? Or are they hearing the gospel of Jesus Christ that would say that whoever is going to be first among you must be the last? Whoever would seek to keep his life must lose it, you know? And I think that's where we want to come in. We want to try to attack the heart of that mindset. That, you know, hey, okay, this rapper over here was saying that, you know, in order to be happy, you have to have two, you know, Lamborghini cars. But is it possible that you could have two Lamborghini cars and still be lonely and still be without any real relationships and community? Is it possible that you could have all the possessions in the world and yet still feel empty inside? And that's what we see a lot of times. It's just that unfortunately, once people have achieved a certain level of economic status, they oftentimes become hardened because they no longer feel like they need God. Why would I need a savior when I can go buy anything anytime that I would want? You know, that's a good reminder for me too. Just, you know, I'm thankful to have a well-paying job that takes care of the kids and my wife and allows us to afford a house and other amenities that we need. But how would I feel if God were to take them all away? If I got a call from my wife while we were after this interview saying the house burned down, would I trust God, or would I feel that he had done me something wrong? But I want to echo what Job said, right? That, you know, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, but blessed be the name of the Lord.
Yeah. And again, moving into these communities and using your economic, if you use the gifts that you've been given by God financially in your community, that again, that opens up, not only does it benefit the community financially and economically, yeah, but gives you opportunities to build relationships with the local business people and community and shop assistants as well. So you've been there 3 years, somebody who is not originally from that community. What has immersing yourself in your local community done is any good? Fruitful stories you can share of relationships that you've built through doing that?
Yeah, well, we've been blessed to have some of these relationships pop up with our neighbors. We have a next door neighbor, a single mother with several children, and we are still trying to break into that relationship a little more where she, we've invited her over for a meal several times, and she's agreed to come several times. And then we make the food, and then she is not able to come. But randomly, with no prompting or no excuse, we'll get a knock on the door every now and again, and she's bought little toys for our kids. And just she'll come in and, you know, so say, so she likes us, she cares about our kids, you know, there's still some hesitancy there to go deeper. But we continue to pray for her, and we love seeing her when we happen to, you know, be out on the sidewalk at the same time. And there's some similar stories. A gentleman across the street, he's what we refer to as the mayor because he's always looking out for the block. And like, he's given me a call before on my phone whenever a parcel has come and someone delivered it and left it out of the door. He'll come and grab it. He'll call me. He said, "I brought it in my house. I didn't want anybody to steal it." So, you know, we've established some good connections there. As far as businesses go, there's, unfortunately, we're in a situation where the majority of the businesses around us are liquor stores or corner bodegas and things like that, to where we don't frequent very often because they don't really have a ton of things for us. And we do have a local hardware store that I've gone on a first name basis with a couple of the employees there and shared the, you know, the truth of the gospel with, which has been encouraging. But yeah, it's just, it is a long, it's a long endeavor. I think I would encourage anybody who's still listening to me talk, who has an interest in maybe going somewhere, is that you have to give it time. If you're not a local, if you're not someone who they would already know and respect, and if you're not coming in as a developer of some sort to where they automatically will, you know, the people will flock to you, it's going to take time to grow those roots for folks to feel comfortable, to see any of that fruit bear. Now, I mean, of course, there have been some nice stories that we've seen where, you know, the first time we interact with somebody, I shared the gospel with a young teenage boy one time. He had been coming to the church, I want to say maybe about 6 months before I started coming. You know, we get together one time at a restaurant and I share the gospel with him, and he actually gave his life to Christ. There's some exciting stories like that every now and again. But for the most part, it's, you know, I've been praying for another teenage boy who I call my nephew since I've been living here, and he's still not like given his life to Christ. I've been praying for our neighbors who I still haven't met because they don't want to come out of their house. So there's a lot of that. I you know, folks my age and younger who go into the mission field or move to ministry oftentimes can mistake their faithfulness in heeding God's call to mean that there will be immediate results on the other side. And it just doesn't work that way. Our pastor Joel has now just celebrated 15 years of being a pastor of our church, which we're very grateful for. But it was just 1 year ago that we got a building. Up until then, we were borrowing buildings from other places, renting locations. It was probably 6 or so years into his ministry before they had their first baptism. Most of the members came, had already been baptized, you know, moving their church membership. And so, you know, it just takes time sometimes, you know. Can the Lord do a quick revival? Absolutely. And we pray for that. But, you know, I love the message of Jesus with his disciples. You know, he spent 3 years investing in just 12 men, you know, that's all he really invested in. And then after those 3 years, those 12 men went and turned the world upside down. you know, that's what the Bible, book of Acts would tell us. So, yeah, try and you know, I even saw this, you know, kind of interacting with you and with Rachel and other folks from Medhurst while we were there, which, by the way, for any viewers, Baltimore and Middlesboro, I felt so at home when we drove. What did you refer to it, at the other side of the tracks, past the town square? They were so similar, and both in, you know, I love the community aspect, you know, we got to, when you opened your home for us and other folks, we had that grill out in the backyard. But then also taking a tour around the city, it was just so, I legitimately told myself, and I told my wife when I got back, I was like, this feels like the part of the UK that I've been wanting to see. y'all can have Kingston and, you know, all that, and Paddington and all that kind of stuff. I'm gonna hang out here and get to know these people. Yeah, but all that to say, you know, the Medhurst has been around, and just taking time to see communities truly trust and believe the people who God has sent to deliver that message.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So again, just, it was wonderful to have you all over in late summer last year. And yeah, it was great. We took you into central Middlesbrough, and as if by magic, about 20 police vans turned up and
yeah,
the streets without causing trouble. But again, like you say, just share a few of the similarities and the differences, because when you people in the UK see movies, America looks like a different world. How different was the UK to where you are in the US when you visited?
Yeah. Well, the biggest difference is just the history. I would say, you know, both we went to London, Middlesbrough, and Edinburgh, Scotland, in our trip. And in all three spots, you were able to see just how really old the country is and how much history there is behind it, which is very cool. Where we live in Baltimore, Maryland was one of the original 13 colonies after, you know, they separated from the UK. And so it does have a lot of history as well, as opposed to when you move further west into the United States. But all that to say, one of the big similarities I noticed was just how people flock to other people, and people just crave community. And it doesn't really matter if it was on the tube, if it was, you know, in the streets. We were noticing just people wanting to be around each other. Now, you had told us that it was an uncharacteristically warm season that we were there. Normally, it's a lot colder and more damp. So it could have also been that the weather helped encourage people to come out of their houses a little bit. But even still, you know, people seeking that opportunity, I think you could just tell people crave community. Economically, you know, I was able to see some big similarities, specifically in London, you know, lots of money and things costing a lot, but also just the poverty piece in Middlesbrough and other spots where you have people who are forgotten, people who have kind of run down what they did have. When we went on that, when you gave me that little tour, one thing I was able to spot, and that you even pointed out, was just the interesting change from block to block demographically and ethnicity, right? Where you have maybe this particular block is where more of the, I think you told me maybe there were more Turkish people living there. And then you have on this side folks who have come from maybe like another, you know, refugee state, where in the United States, it's interesting. We have a very similar, at least in Baltimore, where I live now, we have a very similar dynamic. Where we live, I mentioned before, predominantly Black. The average income is very low. The average cost of a house is very low. And you go one neighborhood over, and the average demographic is white. The average house value quadruples in home value. And so, and yet they share a main road. You know, it's what other side of the road you're on. So it's very interesting how some of those similarities where you have people that, you know, send us in, and people will kind of cast off those who either don't look like them or are not a part of their group, their community. But then you also just have that community aspect to where you could tell if you were one of these folks from Turkey or from wherever, you automatically had a place amongst the rest of them, you know, and you know, same thing in Baltimore, where you'll have people moving for college or folks who will come for different job opportunities, and they target certain neighborhoods that they're going to live in based off of their ethnicity, their level of income, different things like that. It was nice that the language was the same. It was easy for me to transition that way. Although some of the accents up in Scotland got me a little bit. I'm like, say that again. But, you know, it was nice to be able to share the same language. So I would say if anyone from the UK wanted to come to the United States, they would do well to get around and at least be able to understand, you know, at least 3/4 of everything. It was really encouraging just to see the country, the beauty. And I'm sure that beauty exists here in the United States, but you kind of get used to your own surroundings. Yeah. You know, so it's just nice to see that fresh eyes and also to know that people are people everywhere. You know, nobody's really that special.
Cool. Oh, brother, I really appreciate your time. I know you're about to start work soon, aren't you? It's already coming up to 8 a.m. where you are.
Yes, we're getting ready to go into the work day,
Yeah. Oh, awesome. I really appreciate your time, brother, and I hope that we'll be speaking in person soon. Hopefully you'll be able to visit the UK again soon. I'm sure yes. Raymond's desperate to get out to Baltimore as well to spend some time with you guys.
Yes.
Yeah, I really appreciate your time, Kevin. Thanks for joining.
It was my pleasure. Yeah, absolutely. We hope to see you all as well. We want to come back, absolutely. And if you ever need a place to stay in the States, you know where to go.
Awesome. Brilliant. Thanks for joining me on the In Context podcast.